across the land. Blair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar Christopher Hart. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Blair Adams and Christopher Hart, the American adversaries. Drive time.
Ladies and gentlemen, step right up. Let's go see the elephant. We're on a roll.
Such a beautiful day after Memorial Day. A little hot. But I have to ask you, was there one place setting at your dinner table you didn't have to clean yesterday? One plate, knife, fork, spoon, glass, and napkin you didn't have to wash? I hope so, because it's a fine tribute to all those whose sacrifice is so important. Other than that, I hope you're not too sunburned, because the hottest show on radio is on the American Adversaries Drive Time on AM 660, The Answer. And to start this week off, our host has some splaining to do as to what we're going to talk about. Christopher Hart!
All right. Thanks so much, Lara Adams. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being with us. That's right. You are listening to the American Adversaries Drive Time Prime Time Show, coming to you live on AM 660, The Answer, from the Mercury Free Broadcasting Studios. Don't forget, for the very best in mercury free dental care, call my dentist, Dr. James E. Hardy, at 407-678-3399. I was back in the chair today. You get a little surface filling taken care of by the good doctor over there. So, yeah, he takes good care of me. And by the way, no, it's not one of them silver fillings. Hold on a minute.
Something.
What's that, Mike?
No, one of my, this guy, Bill Linkitis, who played with me at Penn State, played 11 years with the Patriots.
Yeah.
He's a dentist. You know, but his hands were so big, you know, he used to call him Thumbs Henderson. You know, it's like, don't put your hands in my mouth, pal. You know?
Well, anyway, Dr. Hardy is also, of course, the author of the book, Mercury Free. One of these days soon, we're going to get him in the studio and talk about mercury free dental care. By the way, the Alzheimer's, people who are researching Alzheimer's think they may have found a link between mercury and Alzheimer's disease.
Yeah, that's one thing, you know, and really every day you hear of somebody who thinks they have the breakthrough and everything, and I'm not sure if I'm happy with this or not. You know, the Player Association put like $100 million toward the study of Alzheimer's and dementia through Harvard University.
Oh, boy.
And I wasn't really for that, because the reality of it is everybody's working on it. All these universities are the pharmaceutical.
I was going to say, you know who's working the hardest is the pharmaceutical companies.
I know, because it's the bonus is there. Boy, you hit the jackpot if you can correct this issue. Why did we spend $100 million? I mean, you know, unless somebody went to Harvard, that I don't know.
I was going to say, it was probably.
I'm still not sold on that spending of money.
All right. Hey, it is Tuesday. Yeah, I know it feels like Monday, but it is Tuesday. So that means it's free refresh computers, free tune-up Tuesday. And that means you can take your laptop or your mainframe over to Refresh Computers in Longwood on 434 between 1792 and Ronald Reagan Boulevard.
Now, they might be closed right now.
Refresh. No, it's Tuesday.
I know, but how late does it stay open?
Well, they're open till 5, after 5.
Okay.
Anyway, you can head on over there. And if you have any questions, you want to make sure they're still there, give them a call at 407-478-8200. That's Refresh Computers. Every Tuesday is free tune-up Tuesday at Refresh Computers. And we do have a lot to talk about tonight. A lot of things have been happening over the weekend. A lot of echoes of the American adversaries, I might add. And we'll see if we can't get to them all. Well, I am Christopher Hart. Lara Lair Adams, of course, opened the show. The other voice you heard, of course, is the chairman of the board, Mike McBath.
Always good to be here.
We also have the Periscope up and running. Lucas Paris is in the studio. He's got us on the scope, so you can go to our channel on YouTube. American Adversaries TV is the channel on YouTube, and you can see what we're doing. There is a time delay, but you will see us the same day, just a few minutes later. And Nicholas Cicero is on the bridge, so we're in good hands. And if you want to be a part of the show, 407-774-8255 is, of course, still the number. Big defeat for the Barack Obama administration today. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in Texas upheld federal Judge Hanley's decision having to do with Barack Obama expanding, shall we say, the illegal immigration status into limit. Expanding is not the right word. Twisting the illegal immigration status into some sort of legal status. And even though they didn't, quote unquote, rule on the merits of the case, the merits of the case came into play. Let me tell you that, because basically what the circuit court, a three-judge panel, two of the three sided with Judge Hanley, saying that Barack Obama went way too far in every instance, in every question that was before the court. They sided with Judge Hanley against the Obama administration, basically saying you did not have the legal authority to do what you did. And this leaves Barack Obama with three options. The first option is to accept the decision and go home. I think we can be assured that, right?
I think it's going to be appealed.
Well, it'll be appealed, but he has two choices to appeal it. He can appeal it to the full Fifth Circuit Court panel of judges. I believe there's like 11 of them that sit on the panel. Or he could take it straight to the Supreme Court, which is a bit of a risk because they could turn around and say, well, you need to send it back to the full Fifth Circuit panel. Basically what this means, now if he takes it straight to the Fifth Circuit, the full panel, they could rule in fairly short order, but it would be months. And of course the clock is ticking on the Obama administration. What this decision pretty much means is that this is going to be tied up in court with the injunction in place until the end of this president's administration, which will leave it to the next president to either drop the case or pursue it further. And, of course, that's going to depend on who gets elected. If Hillary Clinton gets elected, she's already said she would go further than this president. So, obviously, she would continue the fight.
Well, her story will change depending where she is and who she's
in the
debating.
Polls.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, that story can go either way.
Who she's talking to, you know.
Yeah.
But we'll
define
get,
further.
Yeah, we'll get back to her a little bit later. But this is a significant blow to the Obama administration. It's a blow that I predicted would happen, and I predict that he'll lose this case right to the end. And all you have to do is read Judge Hanley's opinion. Judge Hanley basically accepts part of their argument. Part of their argument is, oh, we have prosecutorial discretion. And Judge Hanley says, well, of course you do. If you're a prosecutor, you got prosecutorial discretion. But that does not give you the discretion to do things that the law that
forbids.
You are saying that you are being discretionary about actually forbids. Correct, Mike?
Right. So, and now another thing to look at. I wonder how it actually works in a sense. Does it just freeze everything at this point? Is there any form of continuation? Where do you stand with all these people?
Well, this is the problem Obama has created for himself now.
Like Chris was saying, it's pretty much dead. I mean, until it's going to be handed to the next president.
Legally speaking, politically speaking, it is now hot as fire. Because Barack Obama's made this promise and created all these expectations that aren't going to be fulfilled. Now, who can control the argument as to, you know,
who gets the blame?
Right. As to where the blame falls is going to be who's going to suffer or profit from this politically.
But I wonder, too, even on all the thousands of jobs that were hired, you know, to execute this and get everything.
Right.
What do? Just freeze the jobs, send them all home?
Hopefully, they send them home.
I would like to see that, too, that sounds too logical. They'll probably, you people are on vacation until we get the next response.
Here's Obama's argument. We can't afford to send them home.
Right, exactly.
Of course.
Probably so. You know, which that reminds me, you know, Carly, I was watching Carly Fiorina in an interview the other day, and this woman beginning
She's
to impress
good.
Me more and more.
I like her. The more I hear her, the more I like her.
But I was thinking there's a good response she should put in her repertoire. quiver, her quill, if you will, of arrows. And when the question comes up, well, when you were Hewlett-Packard, you laid, I think she laid off like 5 or 10,000 people, maybe even 20,000. Of course, they have a workforce of hundreds of thousands of people, right? Mm-hmm. So, but she said, yeah, I came in and I made the tough decisions. And you know what I'd like to hear her follow on and say, and when I get into the presidency, I'm going to fire a few people in the federal government, too.
Oh, I think
we got way too many people in the federal government.
You want to get some votes, and you're going to have everybody. I would love to see a guy come on and say, the minute I'm hired, we're going to do layoffs in every sector of the federal government, and we're also going to eliminate laws. And I mean, we are going to go state by state and chop law after law.
Right.
Enough's enough.
And of course, you know, the unions are going to stand up and say, well, no, you're not going to fire anybody. Well, okay, then we're not going to hire anybody either. We are going to stop
just by
hiring
attrition, just
right
to,
now, and by attrition, we're going to cut the labor force in the federal government because it is bloated way, way too much, and then start whittling away at the laws.
The other thing, Chris,
and regulations.
Too, is, I don't know if the public realizes, the revenues coming into the U.S. government today are more than they have ever been in history. You know, I think a lot of people sit home and think we're still trying to catch up from 2000. No! Our revenues are going way beyond that, but our spending just continues to be massive with no stop and no controls with this bozo as president.
And then you add, you know, the debt, the interest on the debt on top of that, which we get nothing for.
It's just a matter of spending out, you know, spending beyond our means. You're absolutely right. The latest numbers from the Treasury Department, we are the first quarter of this year, and the second quarter looks like it'll be the same, the most we've ever taken in.
Yeah.
And but we're still falling behind. And it's because we're still spending way too much because we just have this huge bloated government, bloated with people who are redundant. Let's just face it. They're redundant. We need somebody like Fiorina to come in there and cut the labor force in the federal government. Okay, don't cut us off because when we come back, we got a lot more to talk about. And you are listening to the American Adversaries. It is Drive Time on AM 660, The Answer. And we will be right back.
Gotta love it. Is this not the perfect song for our military ability of our president? I mean, just think, what a macho man,
and
the
this
dancing
is Chris's
queen.
Chris's favorite song.
I know. We enjoy it, but we are starting to get better at labeling different individuals with different songs, and that's going to, you know, make us a more swinging group.
It fits. It fits. It's like, you know, if the shoe fits. Sunday show, if you didn't catch Sunday show, folks, please, after tonight's show, go to our website, AmericanAdversariesRadio.com, and Nick will be put up by then. And we talked, we did readings from Chris Kyle's book, American Sniper. We did readings from Duncan Hunter, Congressman Duncan Hunter's book, Victory in Iraq. We did readings from Glenn Beck's book, Miracles and Massacres. And we did readings from Colonel Danny McKnight's Streets of Mogadishu book. So I really wish you would go back and hear that show. If you didn't hear it, if you want to hear it again, you can do that. But in particular, we did some readings. I looked through Chris Kyle's book. You know, of course, the movie is now just came out on DVD, and you can get your copy at the stores now. Do they have it at Barnes & Noble over there?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, they got him at Barnes & Noble, Lucas says, and American Sniper. And in the movie, you'll see there's a portion that we did the reading from his book about, and it's when one of his Navy SEALs comrades was killed, and his name was Mark Lee. And Mark Lee was written about not only in Chris Kyle's book, but he was also written about in Duncan Hunter's book, Victory in Iraq. And that book came out much before Chris Kyle's book. So the impact of this man's life was profound. And in Mark Lee's case, the impact went beyond Mark Lee because his mother, Debbie Lee, picked up the mantle and made speeches all over the place and carried the banner for the effort for the war in Iraq. Now, the man was killed in Ramadi. And, of course, Ramadi just fell because of our dancing queen president.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to bring this all together here, believe me. But the tragedy, of course, is not just did the the man lose his life, but in the end, his mother lost the argument. Because her argument was basically, look, Saddam Hussein was a really bad guy doing really bad things. He was burying women and children alive, gassing others, burying them. As she put it, he was a weapon of mass destruction himself.
Without a doubt.
Without a doubt.
Not even debatable.
No. And by the way, Bob Woodward finally admitted, what 12 years too late, that he did a bunch of research and found out, no, Bush didn't lie. They may have made a mistake, but they actually thought the weapons of mass destruction were there. And in fact,
everybody did.
And in fact, they've been found there.
And then the other fact is, let's say they weren't. They were going to get there as fast as he could get them anyway. This was the type of guy just like North Korea today. And, you look at our good friends in Iran, and China. Believe me.
Yeah.
They're going to use these things. They're not developing them for nothing.
Right.
And Woodward
right.
also pointed out, too, Chris, that the situation in Iraq is because of Barack Obama's inability to handle this, anything, an effective force in there.
Right. For not leaving 10 to 15,000 troops in there, which is what the military wanted, which is what Colonel Danny McKnight said would have been sufficient to keep the lid on things in there. And more importantly, we had a really good toehold in all the communities now because of the people that we had been working with to develop this goodwill for intelligence. So we would have known well ahead of time when things were going sour and where they were going sour and who was souring the milk. And we would have went there and we would have killed the SOBs, which is what should have been done. Okay? But because we got the dancing queen, we came home. And by the way, Charles Krauthammer wrote a great article. It came out it comes out a few days later, but it was in the Orlando Sentinel Sunday when he quotes the president that we didn't leave Iraq because it was in such dire straits. We left Iraq because the situation was so good there. It was so good. And as Lair pointed out, like Woodward said, it's been destroyed now because we got a dancing queen for a president. Well, we're not the only ones who basically call him the dancing queen. They may use different words, but they see him the same way.
Yeah.
Over the weekend, actually, I believe it was the end of last week, the new Secretary of Defense, Ashton Carter, basically said what we had said on the American Adversaries a week ago, and that is when the Islamic State made the final assault in Ramadi, the Iraqis threw their guns down and ran, even though the Iraqis outnumbered them not only in troops, but in the capability of the weapons that they had. They just threw him down and took off. And then, as a response to that, and we've talked about this man on the show before, and I said, remember this man's name. It's going to come up again and again. His name's Soleimani. General Soleimani is the head of the Quds force, which is Iranian, in Iraq. And he's known over there as General Soleimani.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we get the dancing queen, Jordan gets the warrior king, and Iran gets General Soleimani. And General Soleimani said, well, where in the hell was the U.S.? Where were these bombing strikes? Where was all this support we were supposed to get? Well, the dancing queen was off dancing around somewhere on a golf course or something.
I heard today that in Kosovo, the bombing campaign, there was 700 sorties a day. Today, over there, 20.
And
wow. And did we use modern planes or were we using with double wings?
Well,
turboprop.
Yeah.
Remote controlled.
And there's a bigger difference, too. Of those 700 sorties, 95% or more of them actually use their weapons. In other words, drop bombs on target.
Rather than just flyover.
Okay. Of those 20 sorties you're talking about that they're using today, the vast majority of them come back with their weapons still tucked up underneath their wings.
The other thing, Chris, though, the bless our soldiers is, can you imagine having to listen to these people in the White House while you're fighting a war and they direct you what to do? I mean, they don't even know how to walk out the front door.
It's a testament to the professionalism of our military force.
And their tolerance.
That they don't just get totally demoralized and throw up their hands and say, to hell with this.
I think they're getting close.
I think we're getting all. I love that when he came out the other day, Carter, and made those statements. This is what we like to see. Let's say like a little internal rebellion in the sense we've had it buddy. You're a loser. We know it. You're leaving. Goodbye.
Yeah, not only do we know it, but the worst part is the enemy knows.
The problem is the enemy knows
it.
That's really serious.
That's right.
A real, real bad problem.
That's right.
They know what's in Hillary's emails, too. So.
Oh, yeah.
But there is a solution to this. There is a solution to this. And an Air Force general made a warning that we'll get to after the break. But in that warning, I believe, is the solution. So stick around. And by the way, James Madison employed this solution 200 years ago to great effectiveness. So please stick with us. We'll be right back.
AM 660, The Answer.
The Answer.
Anyway, they fall asleep.
Welcome back to the show, folks. You won't be falling asleep if you listen to us. That was Mike McBath. I am Christopher Hart, along with Lair Adams and Lucas Paris. We're in the studio. He's got the Periscope up and running. You can go to YouTube and see us on our channel, American Adversaries TV. Nick LoCicero is on the bridge. 407-774-8255 is the number. You heard B. Brian Blair refer to those liberal lies in that little bump there as we return. Mike has written a great article about lies and the liars in Washington, D.C. for our latest intel brief, our version of a newsletter, which is coming out this week. And if you'd like to read that article fresh off the press, just join the American Adversaries Army and you'll be able to do that. Go to AmericanAdversariesRadio.com, go to the recruiting office, and you can sign up either there online or it gives you the information how to do that snail mail version. Either way will work, and you will become a member of the American Adversaries Army. Not only will you get a great newsletter with great articles by the likes of Mike McBath. If you'd like to find out what's going on with Nostradamus, he's got an explanation in this month's edition of the American Adversaries Intel Brief. I wrote an article. It's entitled The GOP Recipe for Victory. So if you want to read that, you'll go there. Carl Jackson's great article in there. Plus, it's loaded with great coupons and discounts and just a lot of great stuff. We'd love to have you be a part of the Army. And by the way, as we're developing now more newsletters, we're going to start putting some of the older newsletters online, portions of them, not all of them, but we're, like, for instance, from the first newsletter, we're going to put our bios on our webpage, so you'll be able to see that, anybody. So you'll be able to get a taste. If you haven't joined the Army, you'll be able to get a taste of some of the stuff that you'll get on our news from our newsletter, our what we call our intel brief. Also, you will be automatically, and if you're already a member of the Army, you're automatically entered into a drawing for a free cruise along with us, our Come Sail Away With Me cruise, which sails November 13th from Port Canaveral for a three-night Caribbean cruise, or is that Caribbean, however you want to say it. And so you'll be entered to win that a free ticket in the cabin, of course. And of course, there's two people in the cabin, but hey, it will be free. And if you want to put a deposit down on that, you can go to our website.
Any two people?
Yo, how about four?
That's what I'm saying. Well, I don't know about you NFL guys, but certainly we'd love to have you join.
It's great to see how your Army is progressing too.
Yeah,
you know, more
yeah.
and more. And I think yeah. when you have these get-togethers at a Cafe Positano, that's pretty cool. Good way for everybody to actually talk with those that they hear.
Absolutely.
And express their thoughts.
Speaking of that, 4 weeks from today, we're going to do it again. We're going to try again. Hopefully it won't rain this time, but we're going to have a big party over at Cafe Positano. The reason for celebration this time will be going from 2 hours to 4 hours, right? No, did I say 2 to 4? I meant 1 to 2.
Oh, my God. No one talked to anybody about that.
Oh, my God.
My imagination was running away with me.
I see there, looking at it, going, what? What are you talking about?
Just want to see if y'all are listening. No, from 1 hour to 1 hour to 2 hours, of course, during our drive time show. We're real excited about that and hope you folks can come out and share the excitement with us at Cafe Positano. We'll do a live remote broadcast. Ken's going to bring the Shriners out. He's talking about bringing an airplane out now. I don't know what he means by that. Mike's going to be there. We'll be
You're going to fly that in, Mike?
I doubt it. I'm going to just be in the back corner eating spaghetti.
That's it. That's right. You got it. It's great Italian food. If you want to make a reservation for that night or any night for that matter at Cafe Positano, you know it's graduation season, so it's a great place to have a graduation party.
They better make reservations now.
Yeah, 407-774-8080. That's the number at Cafe Positano, 407-774-8080. Of course, our phone number is 407-774-8255. Before we went to the break, we were talking about the situation in Iraq and more importantly, about how we and our president are being perceived around the world. And the problem is not just Barack Obama now, though. The problem goes a little bit deeper than that. And Mike's got a story that I think will point that out.
But you're talking, reflecting on just the training of the Americans through sports and through our discipline and business.
Well,
and
yep, that. And
I mean, I do reflect on that. A lot of these countries, just because, you know, most of our children have been brought up playing one sport or another, be it baseball, football, basketball, wrestling, whatever. And they've been taught discipline from a very young age, and they've been taught to, you know, take instruction. They've taught to try to achieve at the highest level possible. And that's what we teach our children, both on the academic side, too.
And try to extend yourself.
Right. And I think it's just a case that we are, in our own way, we are built soldiers that just have to be refined once they go into the service. Where when you look at some of these other countries, I mean, you know, I don't know what they can figure out what they're doing. But the problem we have now, as we talked about, is because our president is not disciplined.
Right.
You know, look at his career.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think he ever took the Florida bar, the other Reed. Not the Florida bar. He hits the Maine bar. But, I mean, he never took the Illinois bar.
Right.
But, I mean, they got to look at – we have an undisciplined – head, we got a group of people sitting there who achievement very questionable and integrity very questionable. You know, could these people have played in your sports team? I'll bet you if you look up all four of them, I don't think they played in any sports team.
Probably not.
I think they played, you know, they're playing games with the American, and that's unacceptable.
Didn't you see him fire that rifle? Didn't he look manly there, Mike, firing that rifle? He didn't know how to hold it.
I still can't get over the time when he showed him weightlifting with like 5 pounds weights that my 6-year-old daughter lifts. Are you kidding me? That was so embarrassing. It was unbelievable.
He looked like a black Jane Fonda with big ears.
Dumbo the clown.
Yeah. Actually, she looked a lot better.
But she's just whacked.
But the problem is very severe. Because not only is the president undermining American leadership around the world, undermining discipline here at home, but also undermining our readiness as a military.
Yeah, well, like the day we were talking about General Mark Welsh, you know, head of the Air Force. He came out today and he said very specific. He said, we have 3 to 5 years before China and Russia will field a better Air Force than us. Do you know what that does to us? I mean, I guess the people would rather discuss who delivers a cake to a gay wedding than worry about getting absolutely annihilated with nuclear bombs coming in on us.
Yeah.
And the technology that they have stolen, that's right, the right word, stolen from us, have now elevated them to the point that they're just about the equivalent of we are, and we have a few years left. Right. And they know that we got, you know, we got the worst running the White House, and my concern is something horrendous will happen in the next year and a half because they know no decision will ever be rendered. And the fact that if we lose our Air Force technology-wise to other Air Forces, game's over, buddy.
Well, then
game's
all the money that they want to put in the military, he wants to put into an already top-heavy government.
Well, he wants to put it into welfare.
We needed to put into that as opposed to, I thought the president's first job was the protection of this nation.
Remember the old economic books? I'm ready to convert butter to guns, not guns to butter.
Right.
No, the thing is, it's comic books, not economic.
Oh, yeah.
Right. I want to go back to our Sunday night show for a minute, because this is like deja vu all over again, or whatever the Klingons called it in Star Trek. Because during the readings, we read from, as I said, Glenn Beck's book, Miracles and Massacres. And in that book, he writes about many military confrontations, but he talks about when Thomas Jefferson was president. In some ways, Thomas Jefferson, as brilliant as the man was, he was kind of like Barack Obama. You know, when it came to foreign affairs, they really vexed him. And, of course, our founding fathers really kind of thought that that wasn't our business. But the Barbary pirates made it our business. We had been paying tribute to the Barbary pirates. He had a treasury secretary that said, yeah, the best thing to do is just go ahead and pay them off. You know, go ahead and pay the pirates. And then, of course, they started kidnapping Marines and hijacking ships. And Jefferson kind of didn't really know what to do. And he sent in a couple of ships to try to fix the situation. They failed. So he sent in a brand new ship called the Philadelphia. And he thought the Philadelphia might work because it had the name Philadelphia. You know, and that's where our capital had originally been. That's
psychological edge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he sends a Philadelphia in there. It runs aground. It gets captured, and it's a disaster. The crew gets captured and made hostages and slaves. And they were treated brutally by these Barbary pirates, who, of course, were Muslims. And the Pasha over there was making demands, and he wanted more money. And so basically, Jefferson handed it off to the next president, James Madison, who was a very short, small man. He barely weighed 100 pounds, 5 feet tall. You know what Madison did? He built up the biggest navy the world had ever seen, the biggest naval armada the United States had ever had. He sailed them all over there to Tripoli. He parked them off the coast, and he sent a personal letter to the Pasha, to the Muslim leader, and he said, "Okay, you either leave us the hell alone, you give us our hostages back, or we're going to kill all of you. And we're going to do it, and we're going to slaughter all of you. We're going to destroy your cities. There'll be nothing left but rubble. Which do you want?" You know what the Pasha did?
He said, turned everything over.
He sure in the hell did. You see? And it did not take the firing of one damn cannon.
Right.
All it took was the force that we could have done it with and the will to use it and the ability of the president to convey that message to the other guy. You see, that's the elements that we're missing. If we were to elect somebody like, let's say Marco Rubio. Let's just pick a name out of the hat. Marco Rubio. And he comes in and he decides he's going to be like Reagan. He's going to want, let's say, a 400-ship Navy and to beef up the Air Force, to bring more people into the Marines and the Army, not less. And then he issues an ultimatum. And he says, "Okay, you cats, either you get your act right or we're going to come in there and we're going to whip your ass. Which do you want?"
But see, you can do that when you have the edge. But if we lose our technology edge,
that's what I'm saying.
We're in dire problem, and we're sliding so fast with the dancing queen as president, we are jeopardizing the lives of every American soldier, every American, because the weapons now are so horrifying that, you know, we got to do something.
It starts first with the president bringing in a new attitude. The second, he begins to build the force back. That is what would begin to shake them, when they see our forces really beginning to be built back up, okay? And then third, he issues the ultimatums in a way that they are believable.
But see, the concern now, you got a year and a half. We're going further and further in debt.
We're going to have Philadelphias. We are going to have Philadelphias. Okay, the ship that was sent over there by Jefferson ran aground and was captured, and eventually we had to go in there and destroy it.
And you can
see that the enemy couldn't use it.
You can see in the South China Sea right now what they're doing. They're expanding, and again today they said they're going to build lighthouses further out there, and if you don't like it, too bad.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, does that sound like somebody that's scared to death of you?
Who's issuing the ultimatums here? The bad guys.
Right.
Because
Iran,
they know we got a
China. We got the dancing queen
as president. That's right.
He needs to dance out the door.
Right.
Hit the road, buddy.
Right.
You know?
That's right. You know
what
one of the things that scared the Soviet Union most about Ronald Reagan is because they felt that he would follow through on his threats.
Right.
They felt that he would do what other presidents they didn't think or not sure. They knew with him he meant what he said.
I mean, two of the worst things you can ever do is continue to build your debt and lessen your military.
That's right.
That's when all societies become to an end.
And believe me, these other leaders are smart enough to look at that and see and know what's going on. Not only our foes, but our friends as well, which is why the Saudi Arabians are now looking to Pakistan to buy nuclear weapons so they can protect themselves.
Yep.
You know, they weren't doing that before Barack Obama.
Right.
And Pakistan has had nuclear weapons since when? The 70s or 80s?
Yeah, there's a stable
group.
They've
had them a long time. Well, but at least they haven't used them.
I know.
And they haven't been transferring, other than that one doctor who was helping out Korea and Iran. And we could have killed that guy. But other than that, it's been a fairly stable operation over there. Until now. Until the Dancing Queen.
Right.
All right, we got a whole lot more to talk about, folks. And right, and don't forget, we rise above the noise here. We're shaping revolutions of our time. Oh, now I'm stealing lines from Michelle Obama.
He's trying to start a revolution.
We'll be right back.
Destruction, tax deduction, and the band played on.
Here at last on the ground, and you in mid-air. send in the clowns.
Mike, where do you come up with these songs? I don't know.
I love it. I mean, does this identify the group that's up in the White House? Send
sure
in the
does.
Clowns?
Who is singing this?
This is Old Blue Eyes.
Oh.
I never
Frank Sinatra.
Yeah. Version.
Hey, my mind.
At least he hit the notes right. What's her name never did?
That's yeah. right. Lucas says the crooner of crooners. He's so right about that.
But can you imagine that? That's probably what the other people think when they show up. You know, here they come.
Here come
send
the
in the clowns.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah, speaking of clowns, just
black limousines.
Just a quick diversion here. You know, in Ireland over the weekend, they voted as a nation to approve gay marriage.
I don't think you want to say that joke.
Why not?
I'm the Census Bureau. No,
Gerald Fitzpatrick, Patrick Fitzgerald. What's the difference? I mean,
okay, you said it.
All right. Welcome back to the show. What's the problem with saying somebody's name? All right, bring it in the clowns. I want to, you know.
Well, Sharpton to Cleveland.
That's right.
Here comes the clowns.
That's it. You got it. But we were talking about the situation, of course, with the lack of leadership in the White House and how he's perceived not only at home but around the world as just totally disengaged, so to speak. As Bob Woodward said over the weekend, Barack Obama just doesn't like war. That's too. He should have got another
about that.
Job.
Does anybody like war?
Yeah, he should have got another job.
Yeah, teaching school because you didn't pass the law exam, so you might as well go back. You know.
Yeah, and just because you don't like it doesn't mean you can turn your back on it and walk away from it, and everything's gonna work out all right. It just doesn't work that way. You have to make real tough decisions, like Jefferson couldn't make, but Madison could. And by the way, Madison won the War of 1812, too. He beat the British in much more short order than Washington did, if you want to look at it that way.
He was 5 feet tall. That was it?
Barely 100 pounds.
Wow.
He couldn't have played. Maybe he would have been a
great
wrestler.
He'd been a great wrestler.
That's true. But one thing that the Republicans need to do on this is learn how to change the argument. I heard old L. Rush Fuzbo for a little while today echoing the American adversaries and Carl Jackson, for that matter, weeks later.
He may be listening.
He may be. Who knows? But he was saying that, you know, this question that was posed to Jeb Bush, not only was a ridiculous question on the surface of it, if you knew then what you knew now, would you do? Finally, Rush said they never should – the answers – they shouldn't have bought into the premise. The premise being that there was a mistake made to go into Iraq. It was not a mistake to go into Iraq is the correct answer. And by the way, Rush came up with a good version. What the Republicans could have and should have said was, oh, it was not a mistake. No, until Barack Obama got elected. And that's basically a version of what I said. I said the Republicans should have responded. Jeb Bush actually responded more correctly when he first responded to the question after having misunderstood the question. Because basically he said, no, everybody would have gone to war then. Hillary Clinton would have gone to war knowing then.
But that's why you like a Ted Cruz or somebody, a guy that's a true debater who can turn the question around.
Yeah.
I mean, the reality of it is these people are going to constantly try to think of every way to fool you. Just keep turning the questions on them, you know, and just like you said, look who really caused the problem in, you know, Iraq.
Yep.
It was our man.
It was exactly.
Mr. O.
Exactly.
And instead just turn it on him and answer it that way, and that's my answer. Well, you're supposed to, no, that's my answer.
Right. Instead of allowing the question to be about something Bush did,
right.
Make the question about what Barack Obama did. And as we said earlier, as Charles Krauthammer pointed out in his article last week, Barack Obama had the, let's just say, had the pleasure of making a decision of whether he should leave Iraq or not because the situation had turned around so positively. Everything was going so well in Iraq. And as a matter of fact, that's what Barack said about Iraq.
And what's great about it, what you're defining is a very clear answer that should be used in the debates.
It should be.
Should be the canned answer. Every time that foolish question is asked, here's my answer.
Or any other foolish question.
Right.
See, here's the problem with the Republicans. They want to answer the question. You see, you cannot go into it that blindly. You have to control the argument. And sometimes you control the argument by rejecting the question. The question should have been rejected and then responded to by bringing it to Obama. This is not an election about George W. Bush. This is now an election about Barack Obama and what this president has done. He's president because of what George Bush has done. Now somebody needs to be president because of what he has done.
Right. And I mean, it's such a failure with all the withdrawal of our troops. I think it's such an easy question to respond to now.
It is.
And, you know, that should knock that one out of the debates. That should be simple, right?
It is.
There should be nothing to that.
But all the Republicans fell in line. Oh, no, I would not have done it then if I knew what I knew now.
Yeah, they folded.
Come on. If you stay in that mindset, we're going to have Hillary Clinton as a doggone president.
Well, they ought to attend the next SCORE meeting.
Yeah,
on how to respond to basic sales questions.
Exactly. Exactly. You turn it, the argument, in the direction that you want it to go, not in the direction that they want it to go, don't you see?
No.
And Romney was the same way. That's why he lost.
Yep.
You know, you have to make the argument your argument, not allow it to be their argument. As long as you allow it to be their argument with their premises and their assumptions, you're going to lose every time because they're setting you up for that loss.
And the advantage you have now, you have so many numerous failures by the Obama administration, you should be able to turn every question with any thought at all.
This should
be so simple to absolutely crush them in a debate. It shouldn't be a debatable.
No.
This should be so simple.
Go home
and practice like you do in high school and college if you have a big debate. Come on, just write out every question, because all they do is just try to think of any way to trap you. You know what they're going to ask you? I can tell you what they're going to ask you.
Even if you don't, you know that their question is going to be based on false premises. You see? So, you know, if a hayseed like me can figure it out, certainly, to God, these guys can figure it out. Now, Ted Cruz is the one who has the most ability to do that. But the rest of them need to learn how. Okay, when we come back, we got a whole lot more to talk about. By the way, did you hear the screams from the White House this morning?
No.
Oh, yeah, when the Forbes top list of most powerful women in the world came out, Michelle had dropped to number 10.
Ooh.
Oh.
See, that's still way too high.
RL, Altamont Springs, Orlando. 105.5 W280 CJOVO.
AM 660, The Answer.
Sir. When America fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land. Entertainer and entrepreneur answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar Christopher Hart. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams and Christopher Hart, the American adversaries. Drive time.
You'll see, folks, that we rise above the noise and we're shaping the revolutions of our time.
Sounds pretty good.
Yeah, I stole that from Michelle Obama.
Forget it.
Her latest commencement address.
Picking on her.
So she was number four. Now, I want to go back to what you discussed earlier.
Invitations is the finest form of flattery. What's that?
You said she was number four on the list?
Number 10.
After that speech at Tuskegee? She was still number 10?
Yeah, she dropped from, I think it was number 2 or 3 on the most powerful women in the world Forbes list to number 10.
No matter how much she tried to depress our Coast Guard? She was still number 10? That was the worst speech I ever heard of by a responsible individual. That was pathetic. It was pathetic.
It was a pathetic.
Do you think they paid her $250,000?
I hope not. All right. But welcome back to the show, folks. That is Mike McBath. I am Christopher Hart. Lair Adams here in the studio with you today. We're up on the Periscope. Lucas Paris has got us up. There you go. You go to our channel on YouTube, American Adversaries TV. Nick LoCicero is on the bridge, manning the controls. So we're in good hands. 407-774-8255 is our number as we come to you live, the American Adversaries Drive Time Primetime Show on AM 660, The Answer, from the Mercury Free Broadcasting Studios. Don't you forget, for the very best in mercury free dental care, call my dentist, Dr. James E. Hardy, at 407-678-3399. And please don't forget to ask him about his great book, Mercury Free. And boy, if you got those silver fillings in your head, get them out. Because now we know that they may have something to do with Alzheimer's disease. Certainly, mercury is a very toxic substance, and there is no way you should be putting that in your body. All right, I want to get back to the candidates here for just a few minutes. There was this big Republican to-do in Oklahoma City over the weekend. By the way, Scott Miller of My Liberty Threads is going to be with us briefly on the show tomorrow, because he was there, and he's going to tell us things that he found out. I believe Ben Carson won the straw poll at that one. Now, a week ago, there was a straw poll held here in Orlando, actually in Maitland. It was a roundtable discussion. Carl Jackson, our colleague, was part of the roundtable. Well, not part of the table, but you know what I mean. He was
the chair.
Yeah, that's right. And he did a great job. But it was a great roundtable, I understand. We were at the score. The cocktail party at the time, so we had to set our priorities.
You're not kidding. We didn't make it, Carl, but change the date next time.
But Marco Rubio won the straw poll there. He won it with 30.7% of the vote, and narrowly beating Ted Cruz with 30.2% of the vote. And Rick Santorum actually did better than Rand Paul. And, of course, Rick Santorum is looking to get into the race. You had said, Mike, I believe last week, you were talking about how the more you saw of Marco, the more you kind of like him.
No, I saw he was on a Sunday show, and I thought his ability to respond, his conversation, his thoughts were outstanding. He just comes across much more presidential. And he's likable, which is a likable guy.
Right.
And if they try to knock him on credentials again, that's, hey guys, just look in the White House, please. That part leave out.
Right, exactly. And by the way, one of our most popular presidents, John F. Kennedy, was a first-term senator, right? He had served in the House, but he was the first-term senator from Massachusetts.
And people, if anybody brings it up, they're going to say, well, you're no John Kennedy. But you know what? This guy's proven himself. And I sure hope they try that, because I think it really will backfire. And really, let's look at the age difference between he and Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, and he's got such a great subtle line, why go to look to the past? Let's look to the future.
And I thought that was great. And the other thing that made me sick, though, even was in our local paper, they were talking about his financial condition. And obviously the guy had to liquidate part of his IRA, to generate funds. But the reality of it is, hey, you don't have to be a crooked billionaire like the Clintons. You could be an honest, hardworking,
middle-class
individual.
Exactly.
How about that one? Something different.
Here's Hillary Clinton. Let's just look at this for just a second. Here's Hillary Clinton going to all these extraordinary lengths to make it appear as though she's one of the people, right?
She's part of Marco Rubio's group.
And she's one of the people that she's going around criticizing. Yeah. The top 1% top 1%. Yeah. Yep. She's in this extremely small group of wealthy people. And here's Marco Rubio scratching to get by. Who do you think that the people will really relate to?
Well, that's what I'm saying is, if there comes a debate, I think he could turn that boy to his benefit big time and then just start tearing her apart by her relationships.
Guess who else knows that? And guess who else is worried about it? The Clanton gang.
Jeb?
No,
I know.
Yeah, the Bill and Hills Clanton gang. The New York Times in their Saturday edition Wrote a front page article about how Democrats are uneasy on matchup with Rubio. And I think it comes down to a quote, and this kind of sums it all up, but it gets to the likability, gets to his story, gets to the fact that he can chip away, and he doesn't have to chip away much at the Hispanic vote to make a huge difference. But it kind of gets down to something that a fella by the name of Dan Gelber said. Now, Dan Gelber was the Democratic leader of the Florida House of Representatives, and he retired from the House the same year that Marco Rubio did. So they both made their retirement speeches the same day from the same podium. Gelber spoke first, and he sat down while Rubio spoke. And as Rubio was speaking, Gelber himself recalled, I'm reading now from the article, Gelber himself recalled the day in Tallahassee, Florida in 2008 when he and Mr. Rubio, then the Speaker of the State House, that's Rubio, gave their farewell speeches. He spoke first, followed by Mr. Rubio. As Mr. Gelber's wife looked on, she's sitting there weeping, Mr. Gelber recalled, still incredulous. And I look up and I mouth to her, are you kidding me? He had a saying about Marco Rubio. Gelber said about Rubio, young women swoon, old women pass out, and toilets flush themselves. In other words, he is connecting on an emotional level. This scares the dickens out of Democrats because that has been their ticket to victory. That is their ticket to victory, see? And Hillary is going to have a hard time developing that emotional connection. That's why she's trying so hard now. And that's why she's staying away from the media, because she knows whenever she opens her mouth and the masses see and hear it, they are turned off by it. The opposite is true of Marco Rubio.
No, just what you're stating just a week ago when I actually listened to him for about 20 minutes, you had to be totally impressed. And as you say, he's a good-looking guy. I think he could certainly help us in the Spanish vote area, undoubtedly.
And the women vote.
And the women vote. And the over 65. I think, did I read something today? The over 65 had a big demand for Marco Rubio.
Yeah. So because he makes you feel good about being an American. That's what his life story is all about. It is about all the greatness and goodness that is the United States of America, and people are starved for that.
And he works hard. He goes to the villages a lot, so he's got a ton of people there that are spreading out to other seniors what his message is.
Plus, his whole family history is what? Hard work.
Hard work.
We're not asking for anything. We'll work our way to the top. We'll give it 100%.
Exactly.
This is what, as you said, this is what it's all about.
Yeah, what's a better example for Americans, a Hillary or someone like Marco?
And if you think about Ronald Reagan for a minute, what was Ronald Reagan really so effective at doing but making people feel good about America again? That is what he was, because he lived it. He exuded it. It was part of his personality. And so it came across, and like the whole Morning in America campaign, you know, Morning in America again. People were feeling good about being Americans again after the Jimmy Carter funk. You know, the Jimmy Carter, how do you put it? We're in a, I don't know what the word he used, but basically, you know, he was saying, you know, we're our attitude, we're down. But he didn't know how to get us up again. But Reagan did, and this is what the Clintons feel Rubio is so good at.
And I would predict him without even debate that he would beat Hillary.
They think he has the best chance of beating
Hillary. I mean, he has all the charisma that you're looking for from a leader now. And the question is, sounds very logical to me. He sounds like a logical thinker. He's certainly from a background in the family-wise that we would like, and I think he could be the right guy.
And the most important thing, and this is what he's saying about young women swoon, old women pass out, and toilets flush themselves, because he is a likable person. I mean, when the Democrat's wife is sitting there weeping at Marco Rubio's retirement speech from the Florida House,
I heard that same story, though, about Brock. Toilets backed up. Oh, no, wait.
They overflowed.
Oh, that's right. I got it mixed up. I'm sorry.
All right, don't get mixed up, folks. Stay with us. We'll help keep you straight. We are the American Adversaries. It is drive time, prime time, and we're coming right back.
Hanging overflowed.
Yes, the great believer. I believe that was Mike Macbeth singing that, wasn't there?
That was a song
the pretender,
I requested. I like that song. That's another one I think we could define our president, because I was thinking the other day, I mean, you look at this guy and then you go read the Newsweek article of May 4th, which was Newsweek's final publication, and it was written by liberals who were big advocates of Brock.
Yeah.
Oh, it'll throw you into shock. The questions they have that they didn't answer, that they still haven't been answered, I don't think there's a better song than that.
Yeah, well.
The Manchurian Candidate.
It fits Hillary pretty good, too. She's quite the pretender herself.
She's great at that. I mean, this is great. I love
it. Quite the pretender herself. By the way, that word that Jimmy Carter used was malaise.
Reagan used it, too.
Yeah, well, he used it in reference to the
Jimmy
situation.
Carter malaise. Yeah.
Exactly, the Carter malaise.
Well, there's
Had the Carter malaise, now we got the Obama funk.
Oh, yeah, and I've heard Laura use that in the area of sandwiches. A lot of malaise on mayonnaise. That's
malaise.
That sounds like one of those corny jokes. You hear about the horse who walked in the bar and asked about the long face? See you later.
Try the veal. We're here all week.
All right. Hey, did you guys hear the score over the weekend? Chicago 12, Baltimore 9.
Bang, bang.
12 people murdered in Chicago over the weekend, 9 in Baltimore. Black-on-black crime, for the most part.
Well, I'm certainly glad it wasn't a cop-on-black crime. That'd be something to raise hackles about.
And a police officer, now that you mentioned that, in New Mexico, I believe, was assassinated.
Yes.
Another one of those. And Barack Obama's just, dilly-dallying away the rest of his administration.
The public's going to remember back with the mafia and everything. You just reach a point, you're so fed up that you're going to end up tightening things instead of loosening things. Right now, things are being loosened, but what was it, 33 murders now in Baltimore for the month?
For the month.
Month. Great job.
133. 100 and something, I believe, for the year so far.
And then you saw,
112, I think.
Back, they had 2,500 murders in New York, and then
Blasio.
When the good guy came in, they reduced it to
Giuliani.
It was ridiculous, from 2,500 down to 300, because he added one thing, discipline, respect. And this idea that there's people can run wild and blame everybody else, and this idea of trying to strip these police of the pride and what we all appreciate them for, the society would be total anarchy without policemen.
Well, just look at Baltimore.
It is. Yeah, I was going to say, it kind of goes back to Chris's story about Madison. I mean, showed you right there. It's the toughness.
But you know what? We can do these.
You show force.
Yeah.
Baltimore 9, Chicago. I thought it was baseball, but.
Yeah.
Isn't it sad? It's so sad when you read this, and this is allowed to continue on. It is perpetuated by the inner cities themselves and the liberals who created all the wonderful programs.
Yeah.
So this would never happen.
Yeah. Speaking of New York, the murder rate in New York is up 60% since Mayor Bill, going to give you the de Blasio, became the mayor.
Don't you love liberal policies?
Yeah. And in Ferguson, they just gave an award to one of the protest. I forget what it was. They gave a plaque or something to one of the witnesses or one of the protesters that caused all the problem in Ferguson and the misunderstanding about that. But then it came out that some of those Ferguson protesters weren't in it just for the cause, were they, Mike?
Oh, did that make you sick reading that today? They were talking about a number of the protesters. I love this. They were paid $5,000 a month, and it came from a group called the Missourian Organization for Reform. Oh, wait a second. It's ACORN.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a second. Isn't that the group George Soros is involved with?
Yeah.
What was really the irony of it all, they were paid this. Well, actually, let me take that back. They were promised this. This is great.
They didn't actually get
the
money.
And guess what? They're big protests and everything. They never got paid. And that's to the left, buddy.
That's how this came out. I guess they're pressing a
lawsuit.
They're
protesting because they didn't get paid for the protest.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now I get it.
What are they going to burn down now? The 7-Eleven?
This reminds me of Al Shakedown Sharpton. Shakedown Sharpton is being sued by various organizations because he shook them down. Well, like the Martin family and people in, I believe it was also in Ferguson.
Well, it's nice to see how you bring your children up, too. I can see his daughter, you know, the five.
Boy, that fruit don't fall far from the tree.
Isn't that disgusting? The $5 million lawsuit against the city of New York.
She
fell down. Probably she was eating a sandwich and not even watching where she's going, but she fell down.
Wearing platform.
Then, Fox filmed her a couple weeks later, and they show her climbing a mountain. Yeah. And then they show her doing another athletic thing. And the irony is, but here's what concerns me. She gets into the New York City court.
She'll go far.
Right. Yeah. And you know what? And that is, it sounds funny, but this is how it goes. It's redistribution of wealth. She takes that money. That's taxpayer money. You know, this is not going to be a funny story if she gets one dime. What should happen is the attorney should be disbarred and she should have a real problem.
You're absolutely right about that. This kind of make you feel scummy out there, folks. I mean, you need to go take a shower or something like that. Mike has come up with a great idea. We're going to call it the Scummy Awards.
Yeah, I think we've reached the point. I mean,
there's
probably no more disgusting word than scumbag.
Right.
But you know what? I'm afraid a number of our politicians have finally reached that level. And I think that, you know, we want tips from our listeners and everything who they would like to nominate. And this is a little early because the awards should come out at the beginning of the year for your full year's work.
Right.
And I would think that, you know, with the emails and the dump here on Friday, that obviously Hillary's out in front running right now. You know what I mean? I don't think there's even a debate.
She's the top dog for the top scummy award.
I know. And then Bernie with his suggestion today of a 90% tax bracket.
Bernie Sanders, yeah. He's in the race.
He could be running on the male side. But you know what? He's the old story. I mean, he's just a joke. So I don't, you know, he's not vicious. Hillary's out there. I mean, what they did with the foundation and stuff.
It's ridiculous.
You really do deserve the scummy.
They do, indeed.
And then they have ethical boobs like Harry Reid.
Oh, quality guy.
Yeah, but we'll see. We'll have to have some different categories. We need a political category.
Right.
All right. We need a Hollywood category, an actor's category, right?
Mm-hmm.
And possibly a news person?
Yeah.
Oh, definitely a news person.
A news person
George
category.
George Stephanopoulos could be at the top of the scummies
right now.
Yeah,
he's probably right already
shooting. Yeah,
don't you think so?
You know, right
I mean,
now,
his isn't.
He's running neck and neck with Brian Williams.
Yeah, I mean, they're both a little boring. And I know somebody will accelerate out as we get toward the debates.
Right.
Somebody's going to really pop out from the media.
Yeah,
so
no doubt.
We'll be able to fit one of them in the scummies.
All right. Don't pop out from us, folks. Now, in just a few minutes, the Rays pregame show is getting ready to start on AM 660, The Answer Radio Airwaves. But we'll still be here. We'll be live on AM 660, TheAnswer.com. Or you can go to your free app store and download the free AM 660 The Answer app into your smart device, and you can listen to us on your smart device as well. But we'll be here until 7 o'clock. We'll be live, and, of course, we'll still take your phone calls as well. And now tomorrow, the Rays game starts at 1:10. Now, it should be wrapped up. Everything should be wrapped up well before we start the show at 5, which means we'll have a full two-hour show tomorrow unless they have extra innings or for some reason the game goes way long. It would have to go really way long to really interrupt our show tomorrow. But but if the game is going on, we will come on air as soon as the game is over. I anticipate it will be over, but you never can tell with baseball. It's never over, you know, until the last man is out type thing. But and I anticipate tomorrow we'll have the full 2 hours on air. And then Thursday, and Mike, that's your regular day, the Rays are off.
I know.
We'll have the full 2 hours on air. But now next week we'll have a day or two. We'll have the full 2 hours. As we get further into toward July, there'll be several weeks that we'll have the whole week that we'll have the full two-hour show. And, of course, we're anticipating having the full 2 hours every day when the Rays season is over.
Well, we got the big party coming up.
On the 22nd, please come out and join us. Live remote broadcast, Cafe Positano. And, of course, it's going to start at 5 o'clock. The Shriners are going to be there with motorcycles, cars, camels, airplanes, and clowns.
And if you're an American Adversary Army member, you get coupons.
Yeah, well, you'll have coupons to use. And who knows? We'll have T-shirts for our Army members as well. Free
and we'll
t-shirts.
Be accepting donations to the Clinton Foundation.
Only we're not going to give them to the Clinton Foundation. We're going to keep. We'll be right back. And we're back. And we're still live. And we're on AM660TheAnswer.com. I want to thank you folks for sticking with us and going to the extra effort, if you do, to listen to us on the computer. Maybe you'd listen to us always on the computer. And if you do, we thank you for that. And I am Christopher Hart, along with Lair Adams, the chairman of the board, Mike McBath, in the studio. We're up on the Periscope. Lucas Paris has us on our YouTube channel, American Adversaries TV. Nicholas Cicero is on the bridge, exhausted, but still with us from the Disney Marathon the other day, the 24-hour freeze party at Disney. 407-774-8255 is the number. And we want to remind you once again that we will we'll be here tomorrow for probably the whole 2 hours just on the airwaves. But if you're listening on a computer, of course, you can always listen to us, and you probably get the better signal on the computer. Okay. Mike, I was thinking about you last, well, I guess it was Friday, pick up the Wall Street Journal, and there on the front page, I was thinking about you because I don't have any insurance. I got aced out. They pushed me out of the market, and because on paper, I don't have any income. I can't even get into the Obamacare exchange, which is probably the best thing of all. But here's the story. Health insurers seek big increases. In New Mexico, market leader Healthcare Services Corp is asking for an average jump of 51.6% for the premiums in 2016. Blue Cross Blue Shield of Tennessee, 36.3% increase. And the list just goes on and on. Of course, you've talked about the huge increases that you've suffered through.
I can give you a real example. I have Humana, and this is for my wife and two kids, and our kids are in their 20s, but the reality of it is it went from $610 a month to $1,081. Now, so let's make it $1,100, okay? Now, we know what that's, you know, right off the bat, you're around $12,000, $13,000.
Right.
But now I got to pay over $300 a month for Medicare. So reality of it is I'm up around $16,000, plus for my Humana, yeah, watch this now, plus with my Humana, the deductible is $7,000.
$7,000 with that kind of coverage.
You got it. Well, so, you know, but imagine the people that are out there that don't have, that's why we have the Army
the
here.
Insurance.
And they also don't have the ability to bitch what's going on, because the reality of it is these people are paying for everybody. I mean, this is not a funny thing. And if our politicians would get to work and start weeding out and seeing what's going on, they got a great argument that it's going to be hard to stop when they run for office.
Well, let's just say it's getting ready to hit the fan, because the money is running out. The money is running out in states around the country. Sure. California has run out of federal
money. We knew it was
going
to happen.
Yep. Of course, we're having this big controversy in the state of Florida over whether we should even take the money to begin with. And by the way, the special session starts next week. We shall see where that goes. But the Wall Street Journal article cites high medical costs incurred by people newly enrolled under the Affordable Care Act as the reason that all of these insurance companies are seeking these increases. In other words, the people who are getting free insurance are costing a lot of money, so the people who can pay for it are going to have to pay more,
right?
Like you.
Right.
The problem, though, is even for the people who are getting Obamacare, the poorest of them are too poor to use it.
Yes.
They have insurance that they can't use. And the reason is what Mike just said.
Deductible.
The deductible is so high. They can't pay the deductible. But they still have to pay for the insurance.
The premium.
And right.
One other thing I forgot to mention. Now, I'm up around 16. I forgot to mention the NFL pays $140 a month for me, which I'd have had to pay, for the Supplement C, Medicare C.
Right.
So now let's figure. Now I'm probably paying about $17,000-$18,000
per year.
Yeah, but you aren't having to pay for mammograms, Mike.
Oh, I don't know. Unless me and Bruce Jenner.
Unless he can't make the deductible. But it's insane. But see, once again, though, even eventually the shall we say, the least blessed amongst us with analytical skills are going to figure out that they're not liking paying for something they can't use.
Yeah. Well,
nobody likes to do that. I don't care, you know, what walk of life you come from.
And you were forced to buy this.
Forced to buy something you cannot use.
What I think is good is, like, articles like that, as we go into next January, February, March, now these people are going to get billed for their insurance.
Yeah.
It starts appearing October, November, December.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I think you're going to see a fewer. I know I listen to the radio like all of us, and then I saw that, well, somebody say, well, right now it's about 50-50. Well, wait till they get their billing this time, buddy. It ain't going to be 50-50. The effect is really starting to take hold.
And not only that, but the longer that people have these insurance policies they can't use, many people haven't even tried to use them yet. When they go to try to use it, the cold, sad, hard truth is going to slap them right upside the head, like old Hacksaw's 2x4.
Yeah.
And they're not going to like it. They're not going to like it.
And they ask
bit.
You right up front, can you pay the deductible?
Right. Right. Right.
You got $7,000 in your pocket?
And probably most people don't even know what the deductible is.
No, I honestly believe they don't.
Yeah.
And that's why I think they get away with it for a while.
For a while.
For a while.
Till they go, like Chris says, till they go to the hospital.
But eventually,
the doctor.
Eventually, when they go to use it, they go to discover that it's not all that it was meant to be. But in the process, though, when you sign up for Obamacare, whether you know it or not, you may be signing up for food stamps. You may be signing up for a whole lot of other things that you don't know.
Well, when you mentioned food stamps, we went from, a few years ago, $47 billion. We're now up to $74.6 billion.
A year.
Food stamps.
Yeah. Yet, the most people in America ever on food stamps.
Right.
And it's because we're giving them to people who don't need them.
Right. No, Chris, no. The liberals would say, because now we're feeding the people that can't afford to eat.
Yeah, no, what
well,
I mean.
Can't afford to eat caviar.
I know what you mean.
Yeah,
know what you mean.
Well, let me back up in case somebody out there doesn't mean. I didn't mean to say that all of the food stamps are going to people who don't need them. Obviously, some people do need the assistance. Here's the problem, though. When we give the assistance to people who don't really need it, we are jeopardizing it for mm-hmm. those who do. You see what I'm saying?
And giving them the reason to get off of food stamps.
Well, not only, yeah, exactly. It's a double whammy because they don't have the right incentive and they're bankrupting the system.
Well, don't you think Congress would know that if the unemployment rate comes down, food stamps should go down, the use of food stamps not go up?
Well, that,
you know, we've gone from like 10% down to 5.5, 5.6, yet food stamps going from 47.
Well,
I thought this was to take care of everybody.
The food stamp are betraying the lie of the unemployment rate. The only reason the unemployment rate is some 5% is because so many people aren't even looking for jobs.
That's exactly right. It betrays the story given to us out of Washington.
Right, absolutely. So I don't doubt that the need for food stamps has gone up under this administration for the reasons that we've been talking around here. But to have gone up that dramatically, I doubt that that's...
Now, they're out there soliciting it.
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
The scary part is our national debt, just the clock keeps ticking and ticking.
And how much of this, Chris, do you honestly think in the back of Barack's mind, to me, it's still, looking at his way of thinking, it still seems like reparations.
Well,
to
some extent. It's income redistribution in a perverted sort of way, because the redistribution isn't getting to the people he's trying to distribute it to. In other words, the wealth seems to be just sort of disappearing. Or going to the Clinton Foundation or other organizations like that. Bill Gates, I mean, Gates and Warren Buffett are doing just great. I mean, they're richer than they've ever been.
Oh, yeah.
And I think Warren Buffett's about almost doubled his wealth since Obama became president.
And remember, he was against the pipeline because he owns the railroad.
Yeah. So, you know, he's
a true guy.
And he's
guy.
Won funding Acorn and what it's now become.
Yeah, and he took the merger of Burger King to Canada so he wouldn't have to pay taxes on his investments.
Yeah.
I mean, this is... This, once again, betrays the lie. Any government that tells you they can redistribute wealth is really just telling you that they are going to take somebody's wealth and make everybody poor.
Right.
Because there's no way to take the wealth from the rich and give it to the poor. The poor wouldn't know what to do with it to begin with, I'm sorry to say, because they never worked for it. You only know what to do with wealth when you work for it, when you have to go out and get it on your own. When it's just laid in your lap, you really don't know what to do with it. This is why so many lottery winners end up dead broke, because they never knew how to handle money to begin with.
Boxers, very famous story of many boxers.
I hate to say it, but athletes, Mike, you know this.
Well, I mean, but you can go into like Haiti and the Dominican Republic and a lot of these different islands down there. Why haven't they really progressed to they have great manufacturing capabilities and everything else? They don't have reinvestment capital.
No.
They live hand to mouth, day to day, and they never get off the dole.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality of it, you're doing injustice to them because they've never learned, and they just can't get out of their own way. And what the liberals have done to, particularly our inner city people, is they've been taught absolutely the wrong way to survive in a progressive, I hate that word, not progressive, in a country where success is the ultimate goal.
Well, and then you have as competition China with a populace of people that are willing to work hard, or are willing to go to the top. They're not there living for the handout. They're like, hey, everybody's got to do what they can to survive and grow.
Boy, we should. I'm looking at some statistics here from Baltimore and how long the liberals have controlled the cities.
50 years.
We should. Yeah. As a matter of fact, we should make this a trivia question, maybe. The last Republican city council member in Baltimore left office when?
1968. 69.
No, you were closer when you said 50 years ago. Well, I guess, that would be about 60. Actually, we're talking.
Hello.
We're talking 70 years ago.
Oh,
1942.
My God.
Was the last time they had a Republican
on the city council in Baltimore. It's no wonder they're in the situation that they're in. The last mayor Republican mayor left in 1967. So you're real close on that one. In the Maryland Senate, it has 33 Democrats, 14 Republicans today.
And a Republican governor.
And the list goes on. You know, still is incumbent upon the Republicans to point all this out, to make the case, you know, and there are some attempts to do this, but they're pretty feeble when you ask me.
You would think too, going into an election, they would hire somebody or somebody to take Chicago, take Detroit, and take Baltimore, and just say, look, this is the study we did, this is it, and this is why.
Yeah,
and say, you know, if we're ever going to correct it, we got to do it now. You've had your chance, Mr. O.
Yeah.
You failed miserably. If you were a football coach, you'd been fired 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately,
never rehired.
Right, and you know you never get a job again. But they should know this down pat.
I know.
Or
if I were a Republican super PAC, I would be using this situation, if you will. I'd take Rahm Emanuel's advice. Okay, I'd take the crisis and use it. All right, I would run ads around the rest of the country saying, look at what's going on in these cities, and this is a result of liberal policies. I would run ads in those cities, and I would say, you can thank your liberal politicians for the situation that you're in. And then point out facts like you've had Democratic mayors, you've had liberal politicians running your city. If you are not satisfied with the results, you need to rethink the people you are putting in office.
And one last question is, did you pick your $5,000 check up?
Did you get paid for that protest?
It's the Tea Party's fault. That's why they didn't get paid.
All right. Okay, folks. When we come back, we got another segment to go. We got more things to talk about. Going to talk a little bit about the issue of trust. All right. We'll be right back.
I've been crying over you.
Actually, this goes back to many of our golf events, you know?
And, this is Reggie's game.
If you guys would play golf, we'd be playing this when you're playing.
All right, that's Mike McBath. Larry Adams here along with me, Christopher Hart. We'll be here until 7 o'clock. Of course, Lucas Paris has us up on the Periscope. And, of course, you don't have to worry about whether the Rays are playing or not. It doesn't matter on the Periscope. Nicholas Cicero's on the bridge, 407-774-8255 is the number. Okay. I've been sort of railing, not sort of, I have been railing on the Republicans for working with the president on this trade deal, this fast-track trade status. And the reason part of the reason anyway that I've been railing against the Republicans is, how can you on the one hand say this guy is untrustworthy, he violates the Constitution, he's breaking the law, and then now you're going to turn around and you're going to enable him to put together a very consequential, and I mean that to our personal lives, trade deal? Come on, give me a break. I mean, Alan Grayson has come out against this, and so I'm at least in agreement with Alan Grayson on this. Elizabeth Warren, I guess I'm with Elizabeth Warren on this now for different reasons, but we're all against this. But I think Paul Krugman kind of summed it up, kind of brought us together. Paul Krugman is a very liberal economist. I believe he's a Nobel Prize winning economist. Wasn't he? Yeah.
That's why they use him, the liberals.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But
exactly.
He wrote an editorial, an op-ed for Friday's New York Times, where he talks about what he calls trade and trust. Because he says the issue here is trust.
Well, then it deals off you're talking Mr. O.
What's interesting, though, is that here is this very liberal economist, and I've heard him protect and sing Obama's tune I don't know how many times, questioning whether we should trust this president. He talks about how and this is kind of funny because it's liberals getting a taste of their own medicine.
Yeah, this is great. They're experiencing what they brought on.
Exactly.
I think it's wonderful.
Exactly. Let me just read just a couple of paragraphs from the article. He says, as I see it, the big problem here is one of trust. International economic agreements are inevitably complex, and you don't want to find out that the last minute, just before an up or down all or nothing vote, that a lot of bad stuff has been incorporated into the text. So you want reassurance that the people negotiating the deal are listening to valid concerns, that they are serving the national interest rather than the interests of well-connected corporations. Instead of addressing real concerns, however, the Obama administration has been dismissive, trying to portray skeptics as uninformed hacks who don't understand the virtues of trade. How do you like it? That's what we get all the time from all you liberals. But they're not. The skeptics have, on balance, been more right than wrong about issues like dispute settlement. And the only really hackish economics I've seen in this debate is coming from supporters of the trade pact. By the way, he points out something that I warned about this. Barack Obama, if he's allowed to do this, will try to make this trade deal an avenue for him to implement climate change rules.
Oh, I believe that is definitely part of the act.
To implement gun control rules.
Yeah.
Okay, he kind of points this out, too. He says there will be disputes that arise. Let me just read what he says about that. He says, on dispute settlement. A leaked draft, and by the way, he also complains that they're not allowing anybody to see what they're working out.
Right there, unacceptable. I'm not going to happen.
He says, a leaked draft chapter shows that the deal would create a system under which multinational corporations could sue governments over alleged violations of the agreement and have the cases judged by partially privatized tribunals. In other words, he's saying that let's just say Mitsubishi wants to sue the United States because we're still allowing cars to be made that only have 50 miles per gallon mileage ratings. And that's, according to the trade deal, they should be 100. This is the kind of crap that will be snuck in there. And basically what Krugman is saying is we don't need another Obamacare where we have to vote for it to find out what's in it.
And how about if we lose the suit, who pays for it?
Right.
Oh, the taxpayer.
Right.
Again.
Right.
I wouldn't mind it if it was tied to Brock and Hillary's pocket.
Right.
But not the taxpayer.
But
anything like that's terrible.
It is terrible. It is, but this is something once again we predicted on the show here, and that is that that Barack Obama's biggest enemies are going to end up being a lot of his own people. You know who
I think that's wonderful. I'm glad to see Klugman out here this early in the campaign for the next round. That's great.
Well,
where's Hillary stand on this?
Well, that's the whole point. Is nobody's asking Hillary, and
none of us even know,
and she won't talk if she does. And by the way,
she's hinted she's leading towards
towards it.
Right. And
it, well, that's a real endorsement.
In the New York Times, they also did an article Saturday, and it ran next to the article about Marco Rubio and how he's their biggest fear. And it basically says what I said here on the show. The reason Hillary Clinton doesn't want to talk to the reporters is because she knows she's her own worst enemy. Then when she opens her mouth, she's going to stick her foot in it. She already knows that. That's why she's not talking to the media, and she will not. As this campaign goes on, the media will be aced out of the Hillary Clinton campaign, and she will laugh them off like she did last week. I'll put it on my list of things to consider.
We had to have practice last.
Yeah. And so she's going to be dissing them left and right. But that's not going to work for her.
That's not going to work.
It's going to make her unlikable. And if a guy like Rubio comes along with all that likability, making women faint and toilets flush themselves, it will be a landslide for Rubio. Hillary Clinton is not a winnable candidate. Now, they think Rubio is the only guy or the one with the biggest chance to beat her. I think all the Republican candidates
could beat her.
You better believe it.
She's a horrible candidate.
She's a horrible candidate. Following up a very bad presidency.
Right.
It kind of reminds you of 2008, doesn't it?
Right.
You had a horrible Republican candidate.
Right.
John McCain, for all his heroics as a military man, he was a horrible presidential candidate following a very now unpopular Republican president. It was a recipe for disaster for the Republican Party, and it materialized as a disaster for the country.
Right. Well, that's why I think, like I said, we're all hoping these debates go right in a sense of format and the way they're handled by our candidates because, I mean, we're going to win.
Yeah.
And
the Republicans need to focus on, let's just say, I don't want to give away my article, The Republican Recipe for Victory.
Uh-oh.
But it all lays in, the answers lie in the future, okay? Looking to the future. Pointing the direction in the future. The cue is now some 75% of the country thinks the nation is going in the wrong direction. All right? But a bunch of policy walk answers is not going to make them feel comfortable about following you. You have to make the country believe.
Create a picture.
Create a picture that you know the country's going in the wrong direction. You know how to steer it into the right direction and that you are capable of doing it. The Republican that can sell that message will be in the White House in a couple of years, I guarantee you. And if none of them can sell that message, then we're in a deep fix, much worse than we are even now.
Then Bernie Sanders.
That's right.
We might as well go all the way.
That's right, man.
Let's just forget even closer. Let's go Bernie. He's our man.
All right. Well, we're going to go all the way over to Cafe Positano and chow down on some great Italian cuisine. I hope you folks will join us there on the 22nd. That's 4 weeks from yesterday. I think I said earlier 4 weeks from today. But I thought it was a Monday. It is a Monday.
Okay.
But I was thinking today was a Monday. But today is Tuesday. So 4 weeks from yesterday, Cafe Positano will be there doing a live remote broadcast. It's going to be a lot of fun. Want you to come out and join us. You can make your reservation now at 407-774-8080. That's Cafe Positano.
And don't forget, if you have anyone graduating, getting married, anything like that, that's where you want to go.
Take them there.
AM 660, The Answer, WORL, Altamont Springs, Orlando. A service of Salem Communications. Intelligent, conservative, AM 660, The Answer.